From WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio Boston, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. It seems like there's a new study with some sort of dietary health recommendation every time you turn around. And often, the latest research contradicts what we've heard before. Just in the past few weeks, a study came out claiming that the low-carb diets that so many of us have been encouraged to follow may actually be shortening our lives. Another group of researchers announced that their findings suggest there is no safe level of drinking after years of hearing that moderate alcohol consumption may be good for us. And the examples go on and on. Chocolate, coffee, bacon. It's confusing. And all the conflicting results can actually undermine public trust in science as a whole. My next guest says it's time for change. John Ioannidis is the C.F. Renberg Professor in Disease Prevention, Professor of Medicine, and of Health Research and Policy at Stanford University. He recently wrote an op-ed in the Journal of the American Medical Association about the challenges of improving nutrition research. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
When we hear these conflicting results, are we just witnessing the normal back and forth of different research groups with different methodologies, or is this an indication that there is actually something wrong with either the research process or the way that this research is being presented to the public?
I think that there's a problem with both. We have some of the best scientists working in nutrition epidemiology, but unfortunately, the odds are very tough in terms of getting a reliable answer. The questions are extremely complex, very convoluted. It's very difficult to disentangle all the biases that exist. And therefore, most of the research results that we get are not very reliable. Hmm. On top of that, you have an extra layer of dissemination in public media that probably make even more of the stories than they really are. So we end up having a mess that it's getting propagated, and there seems to be no end to that. So we need to change it.
You point out in your op-ed that if you look for it, you can find a significant association between almost any food and mortality risk. Why is that?
I think it's a composite of many factors. First of all, researchers are trying to find significant results. You know, this is what we are trained for. We try to find interesting associations. So if we have lots of data, and we do have lots of data that have been collected in nutritional epidemiology studies, there will be a lot of searches to try to come up with some significant results. And there's lots of such studies being published. The second issue is that most nutrients are connected with each other. If you eat more of something, you may eat more of something else or less of others. And almost every nutrient will be connected either positively or negatively to some other. So even if you assume that there are some, a few, many, of these nutrients and foods that may have some causal real relationship to things like death, by analyzing large amounts of data, you're doomed to find significant associations with practically every nutrient and every food group. And this is pretty much what we are experiencing, and this is what summing up the data suggests. All food groups seem to be significantly associated, with very few exceptions, with the risk of death and many other outcomes.
You also point out that if we were to take some of these associations to a really granular level, you would start getting what on the face of it seem like some pretty ridiculous things, like one hazelnut a day adds an extra year to your life, one mandarin orange would add 5 years. I mean, these start to seem like really ridiculous recommendations when you get down to that level.
Exactly. And as you say, these are ridiculous calculations. I don't mean that anyone should espouse them. And it's not really the way that scientists present these results. What scientists present is that 12 hazelnuts a day decrease your risk of death by 15% or increase your survival by 15% on a relative risk scale. But then people would misrecognize what relative risks would mean, and they would calculate, okay, so 80 years, a typical life expectancy times 15%, that's 12 years. So 1 year per hazelnut to be gained. If you look at these data more deeply, actually, it's not 12 years. It's something like 1.6, 1.7 years If you run some very sophisticated calculations that are practically never presented in these papers, with very few exceptions.
Why not?
Well, because we are accustomed to presenting what we call relative risks, which can be very misleading when it comes to survival outcomes and things that happen over time, like, you know, getting disease over time. But even 1.7 years with 12 hazelnuts is amazing. It's completely impossible to believe, especially if you look at all the foods and all the different components and all the nutrients. I mean, each one of them is carrying such benefits or such risks. If it's something quote-unquote bad like bacon, maybe one of them or two or a few might be believable, but all of them having such major benefits and risks, if you take them literally, if you follow the best recipe, it might seem that you can become immortal, but obviously that's not the case.
Unfortunately, we haven't found the miracle diet yet. It's kind of disheartening, though, to hear what you're saying. I mean, yes, this is a complex problem, but you seem to be implying or stating that the appropriate tools and analyses aren't always being applied, or at least reported, and that maybe we don't actually have the tools that we need to start teasing apart such a complex problem. Is that really the state of the research and the state of this challenge?
I'm afraid so. And I think that we have both challenges. One is to optimize the tools that we have, and two is to come up with new tools. And I think that there are things that can be done to get a bit more reliable results based on the tools that we have. For example, one such improvement would be to report all the results from each data set for all the possible combinations and associations that you can see between different nutrients and food groups and nutritional variables with all the outcomes that have been captured in that data set. Instead of reporting one at a time and hitting the news one at a time and then making waves and getting people completely confused.
Although that seems like enough information to make anyone's head spin.
Well, it will. But when we have done that in a few occasions, we have seen a pattern that is suggestive that there's very little, if anything, in terms of signals that are clearly strong and, stand apart. Most of that would be compatible with either all noise or a few signals that might be worthwhile pursuing further. So in a way, it yields thousands of results to try to digest, but it also puts things into perspective. Instead of seeing one result at a time and thinking that now I have discovered the elixir of youth. Now, at the same time, even if we do that, it's very difficult to overcome some of the other problems, which is the difficulty to measure nutrition. There have been valiant efforts. There's some very smart people who have invested their career and effort to try to optimize the way that we move from worse to better measurement in nutrition. However, it's very difficult. I mean, just ask yourself, what did you eat yesterday, or what have you been eating the last month, or in the last year? The answers are going to be very suboptimal, very inaccurate, and there's probably other ways that we need to experiment about trying to capture that extremely complex system. The third possibility is to try to perform more randomized trials, which means that instead of just observing what people do, or even worse, asking them what they did and what they ate, try to randomize them to two approaches to their nutrition. And this means that many of them will not really be very faithful to what we suggest and what they are randomized, but at least we can get what they call intention to eat. So, you're randomized to one group that is told to do X and another group that is told to do Y in terms of their diet. The extent to which they can be faithful to that allocated path is very interesting on its own. If that path doesn't work, it's not beneficial for their health, or if it's so convoluted that they cannot really follow that diet, at the end of the day, it's pretty much the same. The reason why they failed is different, but practically, we know that if we recommend something that is so complex and so difficult, people will not do it. So even if there is some benefit, we cannot reap it. So a bit more experimental, rigorous, randomized experimentation would be worthwhile to undertake. And it may be that many of these randomized trials, like most of the ones that we have done today, will just give quote-unquote negative results, meaning no difference between one nutrition supplementation versus none, or one pattern versus another. And this may be fine. You know, we would know that if you, for example, go down a low-fat versus low-carb diet and we see no difference, we can tell you that that doesn't seem to make a difference in terms of your risk of dying or other major outcomes, if that's the case.
I mean, just as hearing these conflicting results can confuse people and lead them to kind of throw out all of the potential recommendations, hearing about these systemic challenges, and even as you are proposing solutions, you're poking holes in those solutions. Is it time to just throw this whole idea of nutrition research and trying to find the best way to eat to extend your life? Do we need to just give up on that?
Well, I think we need a moratorium on big claims about nutrition and how exactly to eat in order to live better and longer. I think the thing that we need to take a step back and say that, unfortunately, we cannot give you such granular advice. We still can give some advice. For example, it's clear that if we eat more, we will become obese for the same level of energy expenditure. The more we eat, the more fat we become. There's probably differences across people based on their metabolic profile and their genetics. But as a rule, this is pretty much a rule. And focusing on telling people that you can eat more food if it's quote-unquote quality food, I think this is misleading. You know, I think that we are fueling obesity just by telling people that, oh, don't worry, this is very good food, just eat more of that. Well, we will still become obese, no matter if it's high quality, quote-unquote. So I think we can tell people and refocus our advice to some basic issues. Don't eat too much, try to be moderate, avoid deficiencies. Clearly, if we lack some essential vitamins, that would be devastating. I mean, we know that for centuries, that if you don't get enough vitamin C, you will get scurvy. So moderation, make sure that we cover the bases, and a balanced diet is always a nice idea. But telling you exactly what to eat, this is clearly not something we can do right now, and we should just be honest about it.
John Ioannidis is a professor at Stanford University. His op-ed in the Journal of the American Medical Association was titled "The Challenge of Reforming Nutritional Epidemiological Research." John, thanks so much for talking with us and sharing a little bit of wisdom about maybe a more sane way to try to eat healthily.
A million thanks. Have a wonderful day.
Up next, a newly released database names 700 cases of sexual abuse in science, and it's sparking calls for greater accountability. Living Lab Radio continues after a short break.